Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 257, being recorded on the 5th of December, 2018, with special guest Yair Tor. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Kendall, Cynthia, and of course our special guest, and we'll give Yair a chance to introduce himself just shortly. But before that, let's do a roundup on the Azure news. And I know Kendall and Cynthia, you guys have put a bunch of links in the show notes. Something you guys want to start with?
Yeah, sure. I'll start us off. So yesterday we had the Microsoft Connect for 2018, and essentially it's a one-day conference where we hear from leadership about some of the new updates that are coming out. So I'm sure a lot of you heard about Visual Studio 2019's first preview coming out. But they also had a session called the 5 Azure Services that every developer should know. So I highly recommend checking out some of the different Connect sessions. They go into containers and some of our other AI offerings. So really recommend checking that out. Really enjoyed seeing some of the sessions and just hearing more about the vision of where Microsoft's going in the cloud space. A couple of other updates as well. Azure Container Service is actually going to be retired in January of 2020. And that's essentially just because Azure Kubernetes Service now replaces all of that functionality. So I think that's just awesome to be transparent about what we will be supporting in the future and making sure that people are aware of that shift so they can become really proactive about making that switch. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on is the new serverless community library. So essentially, it's an open source library of different components that model a lot of the common use cases, integrating with functions and logic apps. And so essentially, they can be deployed. And instead of having to go and create that for yourself, if it's a common use case, you can just go ahead and deploy from this library. And that will take care of a lot of the work for you in some of these, common use cases. So I think that's super awesome. There's over 40 plus components that have already been developed that are available, and we can obviously share the link in the show notes so that people can take the time to check that out. And it's great too for people who are looking for learning resources, because you have 40 really great use cases that you can use as a model for when you would use these kind of serverless technologies. So that's all I had.
And that's a good follow-up from the last episode, right? Living in a serverless world. So some good resources there.
Right.
Cynthia, is there some stuff you like in the updates?
Yeah, I was actually looking at one surrounding Power BI Premium. So now they just announced a public preview of paginated reports. On the past, users of Power BI have been using a tool like Report Builder to produce like paginated reports for really nicely formatted print-ready reports that are in different pages and that can connect directly to sources like Azure SQL Database or Microsoft SQL servers. And now that is becoming a public preview feature all integrated within Power BI. So now people are able to do not just looking at the analytics, but also producing reports all from the same place.
Very nice. Cool. I don't know if you guys talked about this Azure Security Center update from last week. I wasn't on the show, but Security Center is something that I've been using a lot with my customer. And it essentially highlights a lot of the, configuration or potential security loopholes you might have in some of your resources, but it didn't cover any networking issues that you may have in your configuration or setup. And now the new update for Security Center, it shows you a kind of like a network map to show you how the resources are talking to each other. And it might give you an idea as to maybe there's a connection that's being made which you didn't expect. Maybe a server was talking to another server when they shouldn't have been, things like that. So it's a nice feature. kind of gives you a visual tool to see how your resources are talking to each other. What else? Anything else you guys want to talk about?
There is one more thing. So Azure API Management is now bringing in a consumption tier level. So essentially this is, and it's something they actually talked about at the Connect conference yesterday, but this is kind of in that effort to make Azure resources more accessible to, you know, people who might be introductory or just trying out API management and don't want to go in and spend a lot of money up front. So having that consumption tier is really going to tailor those costs to your per use. And so I think that's another great way to just see how we're really driving down costs in order to make some of these really impactful and powerful services available to not only large enterprises, but also to customers who are new to that space. So
nice. A few more other updates I just caught over here is with Azure Automation now, they've kind of integrated change tracking in it. So you could see who's making changes to all the various scripts and the runbooks that you put in there. Also, Azure Portal, there is a new account manager feature that's in there. You know, typically when you use Azure Portal, you log in with an Active Directory tenant ID. But sometimes you might have more than one ID and it's difficult to switch IDs. So now there is this nice way where you could take on different personas and, you know, especially if you're a developer or a consultant like we are and you support different customers, you could switch, you can switch between tenants very easily. So that's something that's in there. Okay. Anything else in there that you caught your eye, or should you think that's a good wrap up of the news?
That is all for me.
Excellent. Okay. Well, then let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Yair. Yair, please go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you do at Microsoft, what you're passionate about in the Azure space, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. So, hi, everyone. My name is Yair Ator, and I'm a Principal Program Manager in the Azure Networking team. Focused on Azure network security and specifically working on a new product that we've released, Azure Firewall. I've been at Microsoft for a long time, about 10 years, most of it in the security space and in Azure security and even before in security, so that is my passion. And happy to be here with you today.
Thank you. And, I think in the time before this show when we were just getting set up, I asked you a question, and I'll ask you again. I've heard of the WAF, right? The Windows Application Firewall. So tell me how that's different from what you're referring to, which is Azure Firewall.
Yeah. So that is a great question. Azure Firewall is a cloud native firewall, stateful firewall as a service. And as opposed to the WAF that is focused on incoming layer 7 protection with incoming HTTPS, SSL termination, load balancing, protection from common web attacks like SQL injection and cross-site scripting, this is what the WAF is being focused on. Azure Firewall actually started from the outbound kind of protection. Specifically focused on data exfiltration protection, but we evolved it to a full firewall that is able to actually provide full VNet protection for outbound, inbound, spoke-to-spoke, and even hybrid connections. So when you use it for inbound connections, usually what you do is that you do that for either non-HTTP or HTTPS connections, anything else. Or you do it for HTTP, HTTPS connections when you use WAF as a service outside of Azure from one of the providers of WAF as a service. So if your backend server is actually sitting on Azure, you might still want to get to Azure over HTTP or HTTPS, but the protections that you're looking for in that case is not WAF application level protection, but network level protection. So that is kind of the essence.
Okay, so I know in the past I recall seeing that there used to be, virtual machines with specific images that you could get from the gallery that had some sort of appliance or software that could uh, that could act as a firewall. So is this something along those lines where now Microsoft's got its own offering for a firewall?
So this is a great question. So of course, you can still deploy network virtual appliance for many of our partners, and many customers do, depending on the scenario. But in that case, we are talking about a built-in service into the platform. It's a managed service, so you don't deploy any virtual machine. Behind the scenes, it is still today a dedicated service, meaning that the machines there are running just in your environment and just for you. But this is an implementation detail. You have a bunch of load balancers there and virtual machine skill set and lots of other kind of internals. But from a customer standpoint, this is a fully scalable and highly available service.
Okay. And how does this firewall integrate with other Azure services? Like, you know, you mentioned the load balancer or any traffic manager, things like that. Like, is there any integration with any of these other services that we have out there?
Yeah, so this is a built-in, service into the platform. So it has all the methods that the platform provides. I mean, you can deploy to PowerShell REST, CLI templates, a portal. And from that perspective, it is kind of built-in control. In terms of the load balancer that I mentioned is included within the firewall. So it's fully integrated, but you don't see it. You just use the firewall. You don't need to set up load balancers or virtual machines or to wire them together or to manage them. That is kind of given to you.
I see. So if I have a virtual network that I'm setting up, you simply deploy the firewall inside of the VNet, or where does this get deployed?
Yeah, so the firewall is deployed into a VNet. Typically, it is deployed to a central VNet, meaning a VNet that you use as kind of a hub where you connect other Spoke VNets to that. You don't have to do that, but this is a typical deployment scenario because it allows you to use the same firewall across different subscriptions and virtual networks in a region. Mm-hmm. Some customers have one central VNet per region. Some of them have multiple for different purposes because central VNets provide a security boundary. There is no immediate routing between VNets. So some have, VNet, central VNet for production and central VNet for staging, or central VNet for a business unit or another business unit. But the essence is that you deploy it into a VNet. In that VNet, you have a specific dedicated subnet that is dedicated just for the firewall. It has a specific name, and you deploy it there. The deployment is just in a click, like any other Azure resource. And you have multiple entry points for that. So in your VNet, if you look for the VNet properties, you will see an entry point for installing a firewall. And of course, you can do it from Marketplace.
So I have a quick question, and I think this might show that I'm not a security person, but when I think about firewall, I think about, we're securing our virtual network. So in what cases would we not use a firewall? Why would not every person be using a firewall for protection?
So this is a great question, and I think like most customers need the firewall because firewall provides central governance for all traffic flows. It's kind of your central choke point where you see all the traffic and you can filter all the traffic. And it provides you with the ability to do that across virtual networks and subscriptions. And I think like a main feature of that is to be able to log everything centrally. And you can send those logs directly through Azure Monitor, either to your Events Hub or to Log Analytics or to your storage account. And from there, of course, you can take it to your on-premise security incident and event management, the SIEM system. So I would say that most customers would need that. I think like the challenge is for very small customers, the price point is probably, even though it's much cheaper than deploying a network virtual appliance with high availability and two load balancers and maintaining that, the price point might be a little bit too high for very small customers. In the future, we'll have a basic SKU for them, but it's not yet available. So I would say that everybody would like to have one, but maybe it's not from a price point of view, it might be challenging for very small deployments.
Okay, that makes sense, because it obviously seems to be something that would be critical to have in your architecture and to plan for. So that kind of clarifies that for me. Thank you so much.
And I would say that we do have built into the platform network security groups, which is kind of a basic networking functionality at the network layer only, that is done in a distributed manner and closer to the VM. And that is usually working side by side with Azure Firewall. So network security groups provide inside VNet segmentation and protection for closer to the host and to the VM. And Azure Firewall is a central control across different subscription and virtual networks. So I would assume that all customers should use NSG, and those customers who are interested in a more advanced functionality, they will use Azure Firewall, and if they are really advanced, they will use third-party NVAs for advanced features, because Azure Firewall today is a basic firewall. We are investing, we are kind of growing the service, but the basic feature set is not enough for certain customers. So we are typically advising customers when we have more advanced needs to use Azure Firewall side by side with third-party virtual appliances.
And when was the introduction or the first release of Azure Firewall?
So we launched Azure Firewall at Ignite as GA, but it was a public preview since July.
Okay, so it's still very new, though.
It's very new.
But what great functionality for how young this is. So kudos to the team.
Thank you.
So you mentioned earlier a little bit about on-premises. Could you tell us a little bit about what Azure Firewall would look like for a hybrid environment? Because I know a lot of our customers, when they're first trying out Azure or cloud in general, they're not completely ready to move everything onto the cloud yet. So what would that look like?
Yeah, so this is a great question. One of the, I think, driving scenarios for Azure Firewall today is a wish of customers to stop backhauling traffic from Azure to on-premises in order to inspect outbound traffic. So customers have deployments running in Azure. These deployments need internet access either for public bus services or for non-Azure destinations. It might be Windows updates. It might be some partners. And the typical deployment model for people today, that the typical architecture is that these virtual machines that are running in Azure needs to go back all the way to on-premises over ExpressRoute or VPN. Then they go through the security stack on-premises just to be able to go back to the internet and get to the destination. That is certainly not effective if all you want to access is just a public pass service or update or whatever. And people are looking to basically cut this path and make it shorter. So by deploying a firewall in Azure for these scenarios, they are avoiding going back to on-premises. The other part is that traffic that is coming from on-premises and using Azure as a data center in the cloud, basically extending the data center, that traffic should also be filtered. So customers are looking to separate between the public cloud and on-premises, and now filtering between the two, and Azure Firewall sits just there in between.
And Cynthia, you asked exactly the same question I was going to ask, thank you. But I want to extend that, though. I'm glad you mentioned about the route that the traffic, these requests take, going over the express route and then getting through the customer's internet access point. My customer does the same thing, but the reason they do it is they have, F5 load balancers and firewalls to do inspection of data for PII and compliance reasons, right? So that's why they have that. So if we were to cut short it by using Azure Firewall, are those features available in Azure Firewall today?
So this is a good question. So the feature set that we started with the Azure Firewall is determined by customer requests, and the way that we are going to evolve the service also fully depend on customer requests. Usually I give the example of TV remotes that you have at home. You have tons of buttons there, but most people don't know what they are about. I mean, volume up and down, channel up and down. If you are very advanced, maybe you're recording, but other than that, you don't know about the other buttons and you don't care. So we are trying to find what are those buttons, and certainly we don't have all of them today. So if you need a DLP solution or IDS IPS, we don't have that yet. Things like that are on our roadmap. We are providing FQDN filtering, which is basically ability to limit your admin access to a certain destination, set of destinations. We are providing a default infrastructure rule collection. What it really means is that while everything is denied by default, your Azure environment might need access for a very small amount of platform services that you are not even aware of. And you know, you can override that behavior and block them, but we are basically allowing you to whitelist them by default. We are providing you with a set of FQDN tags, which is a way for you to easily basically add rules for specific things, like you want to allow Azure backup or app service environment or Windows update. You can do it yourself, but we are allowing you to do that more easily. And of course, we are providing SourceNet and DNet support and full logging and monitoring. The feature set will be evolving over time. So we are working on multiple additional new features. But certainly, if you need specific features that are only exist today on premises for you, or you need them in the cloud, then you can always deploy a network virtual appliance for these scenarios.
That's good. Thank you. And I know you kind of briefly touched upon the pricing, or at least made a mention about it, but can you share any more details about how pricing works in the current year?
Yeah, so the current year is just a standard SKU. In the future, we'll have also basic and premium. And for the standard SKU, billing is based on two different meters. So first, it's an hourly price. It's one $0.25 per hour. And in addition to that, there is a price for per GB processed, which is 3 cents. And the reason why we have that price in addition to the hourly price is that because the service is auto-scalable, so no matter how much traffic you push to that, it will take it. I mean, we have a soft limit of 1,000 terabytes per month on a given deployment, but in terms of, you know, customers that we've met so far, nobody is getting close to that. So you can have many real physical instances running behind the scenes, and you still pay the same hourly price. So the way that we can scale that and still, you know, support it and cover the cost is by doing the per GB price as well. For very high throughput customers, we are discounting the GB per GB price. It's to date over 10 terabytes per month per deployment. We are open to discount that. In the future, we'll have a second meter that is doing that automatically.
Okay, great. And could we use something like Network Watcher with Azure Firewall, for example?
Yeah, so you can run Network Watcher and it will identify Azure Firewall as a node when you test your connectivity. There are advanced features of Network Watcher that are on the roadmap but not yet supported, like analyzing the rules with Network Watcher, like it does for NSG, for example. So that is not yet supported, but the connectivity is supported, connectivity check.
So what's the best way for someone to kind of try out the Azure Firewall? You know, if somebody out there is interested, I'm sure our listeners are, how best may they just, you know, kick the tires a little bit?
So the easiest way, I would say, is just to deploy a template. We have a template on GitHub that is pointed from our public documentation. I mean, if you search for Azure Firewall documentation and, you know, you get to our page, there are a bunch of tutorials, but the easiest way is either to run the PowerShell or to just deploy a template. The template will deploy a sandbox environment. It's a VNet with a couple of subnets, with a quote-unquote protected server and a firewall and all the routing and everything. And that is kind of a very easy way to get started. But it's also relatively easy just to click on, you know, the firewall deployment in your VNet, and just give it a shot and see what happens. You know, it's not too difficult.
Okay, great. Well, this has been a very, very informative. Glad to have talked about a new service on the show here. So thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else, Kendall, that you want to ask of Yair?
I don't think so. I think you did incredible explaining the functionality, and we really appreciate having you on the show.
Thank you.
All right. If there's any specific links or resources you wish to share with our listeners, feel free to send them over to me, and I'll put them along with this particular episode.
Okay. Sounds great.
Thanks a lot to you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.